Welcome to KPTZ's Nature Now, a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners, care of kptz.org.
Hello, and welcome to Nature Now for the second week of November. I'm Nan Evans, and today you'll hear part two of a pre-recorded show featuring the hosts of Nature Now. Was recorded during the KPTZ Fund Drive in April of this year. Deborah Kelso, Mary Robson, and I toted in many of our favorite books to the studio to share with each other and to recommend them to listeners who might be looking for reading material related to the natural world around us. And we also read a few excerpts. The show was introduced by station manager Nora Petrich, and also included Nature Now engineer and editor Charlie Flashman talking about the program's ending music. Charlie selects ending music for each program to fit the topic. You won't hear the usual observations and upcoming events portions this week, but we will revisit mystery sounds from previous shows, and you'll hear a relevant musical finish.
This is a special show of Nature Now. We have Nan Evans, Deborah Kelso, and Mary Robson with Charlie Fleischman all sitting in here together talking about their favorite books. This has just been a fantastic show. So thank you for coming in.
I've talked to someone who said, you know what I really like? I like the mystery sound.
And actually, yes, I met somebody on the street a week or two ago. She says, oh, I know you. Oh, you're Nature. Yeah, you do the mystery sounds. So I think that's a setup.
I think it is a setup.
So let's hear another one of those.
It is a giant Pacific salamander growling as it defends its territory. They are among very few salamander species capable of producing vocalizations, at least ones that we humans can hear. It is the largest salamander in Oregon and Washington. The species that we have here on the Olympic Peninsula is the Cope's giant salamander, and terrestrial adults are extremely rare. They are gorgeous, almost 8 inches total length, large and robust, with tan and slate marbling patterns all over their bodies. It is more commonly found in its aquatic larval and neotenic form, which is more drab brown and has small fringed gills. They are generally nocturnal, spending much of the day hiding beneath rocks or other hidden cavities in the stream, and inhabit small rocky creeks, streams, and seeps, and occasionally cold mountain lakes. Their life history is very poorly understood, with virtually nothing known about what triggers the very rare metamorphosis into a terrestrial adult.
Who would have thought? I certainly never knew that.
You know, just so astonishing what's out there.
You know, we're having a wonderful time here in the studio, and I wanted
we've meant to have this conversation ages.
I wanted to sort of put a shout out that we're not a very exclusive group, and in fact, we would love to have interested folks join the Nature Now team. It's just tremendous amount of fun. None of us had radio experience when we sort of scratched our heads and said, oh, I think that sounds like something we might be able to do.
Well, Kate Dwyer coaxed us into it.
She did initially.
And she occasionally will do a guest appearance now, much to our delight.
Yes. And if there's folks out there in Radioland who are at least interested or would consider joining our team, drop us an email at naturenow@kptz.org. Again, it's just naturenow@kptz.org. You can also use that to share observations or program ideas or people you'd like us to have on the show. Mm-hmm. But we would love to have more folks sharing this fun.
Yes, indeed. And speaking of sharing, my next choice, well, there are two choices, bird books. And, you know, everyone knows about the National Geographic Bird Book, which is a great field guide for the quality of its illustrations. And Sibley's is really great because it has, even though the illustrations are smaller, it has a great variety, all the different variants that you can see across the country. But there is an odd little guide that was given to me several years ago that is really good for this specific area, and it's called Birds of the Puget Sound Region, and it's put together by Bob Morse, Tom Aversa, and Hal Opperman, and it's a small little red volume that is packed with great photos and great information for this specific area, because sometimes you look at a bird book and they're usually the birds of North America, and there's so much covered that you go, oh, where do I start? But this one is a great place to start. And the other guide that I would like to mention that's kind of obscure that most people will not be aware of is one called Bird Tracks and Sign, put together by Mark Elbrock and Eleanor Marks. And he also has a beautiful guide that's just animal tracks. But this one is Bird Tracks and Sign. Hmm. And professionally, I study birds. So while I love all field guides, I especially love bird field guides. And this one is the only one that I've found that has a reference to feathers. Mm-hmm. You're always finding feathers out in the field, and you're going, now, what could this be? Because you don't know what type of feather it is. And this one has a really great series of photos of different feathers, and if it's a primary or a secondary, or if it's a contour feather, a body feather, a tail feather. Of course, they can't cover that many species, but they give you a nice sampling, and it's a really nice guide.
I like this.
That's great. Debron, have you seen the book called Feathers?
Oh,
yes.
I could have brought that one in, too.
Actually, you were originally going to bring that one.
Yeah, it's Feathers by Thor Hansen.
Thor Hansen, he's in Bellingham also?
He lives up on San Juan Island.
Okay. It's incredible.
I haven't read it yet, but I was given it, and I've been saving it for
a very special book. I was first taken in because he goes through the sort of story of, well, how did feathers evolve, and how did biologists figure out how feathers evolved? And he's got references to dinosaurs with feathers.
Which is a creepy thought.
But it was just like, really? And then he talks about the function of feathers and how birds use feathers. And I mean, he even takes a small sort of trip into the feather industry and feathers as used in Las Vegas.
That's how a lot of birds met their end.
That's right.
In providing finery for fancy ladies.
And he takes a really interesting trip into that world. I thought I would really resist that little chapter, but I found it fascinating. He was very even about his discussion, I thought.
Well, my son is a fly fisherman, and you really can't build a lot of fishing flies without at least some feathers. I wanted to add, if you're thinking of joining us as Nature Now producers and presenters, don't forget that we have great engineering help. I want to give a shout out to Charlie Fleshman, because if you're worried about coming on the radio because you might sneeze or go just at the wrong time, Charlie is a genius at removing the unneeded so that our shows sound smooth and wonderful. It's a terrific part of KPTZ.
He is an invaluable part of our team. And he chooses the music at the end.
Yes, he does.
If you listen on a regular basis to the show, you have to get into the habit of listening to the very end and making sure you appreciate the sly humor and the beauty of the song. I mean, there are usually little puns woven in to why he chose that song for the specific
Charlie
program.
Charlie is amazing, both for his choice of music and for his wizardry on the editing. One of my favorite tunes Charlie chose was about a year or so ago. I was interviewing Emily Grayson from University of Washington about the invasive green crab that's working its way into the Salish Sea. Charlie, tell the story of the music.
Well, I found a Donovan song. It was about crabs, and I listened to the song most of the way through, and it's about crabs and that kind of thing. And it gets near the end about 20 seconds ago. Well,
and it's called The Tinker and the Crab.
The Tinker and
right?
the Crab. Gets near the end of the song, and out comes the line, and the green crab came up out of the sea, and I went, oh, boy. This is what I've been waiting for. And I didn't know it was there, and that was perfect. I had a good one a week or two ago, too. It was a repeat show about the Salish Sea, Jewel of Pacific Northwest, the book. So I found a song about the sea, and the mystery sound was Gray Whale. And so I found a song about the sea done by David Gray.
And as Deborah mentioned, when you listen to the music at the end, you'll always get sort of a clue from Charlie. He'll give the title and the artist, and it's a great time to just sort of chuckle. And I have to admit, I'm only going to spend like half a second on this because this show aired just last week. I also brought in...
But it's a great show. Oh, I had missed it the first time, so I was really happy to hear it.
The book by Joe Gatos, who lives on Orcas, and Audrey Benedict, called The Salish Sea, The Jewel of the Pacific Northwest. It has gorgeous photographs in it that just... Oh, and here's one that... We've got a seagull who's chowing down on a starfish that is bigger than its mouth is. And it's also well written.
I have my own copy of that book. It's a beautiful, beautiful book.
It is
book.
A lovely book. Yeah. And Joe sent me this book just prior to the release of the book and just prior to my interview with him. And it's signed.
Oh, you know? Yay.
I am sending it to the Salish Sea book to my son in Boston for his birthday next month because I am trying gradually to entice him back to the Pacific Northwest.
What a good thing.
From Boston.
Yeah.
It may take years, but I'm having fun selecting books for him. And this is one that has really
That's a great
meant
plan.
A lot to me,
great
too.
Great idea. I didn't actually intend to go quite there with the Salish Sea book, but it's...
It was a beautiful segue with
perfect
the Charlie
segue.
Gave you.
I want to take a small trip into the sort of poetic and philosophy world. Kathleen Dean Moore is a professor at Oregon State University in Corvallis. I like many things she's written, but the book I brought in is called Wild Comfort, The Solace of Nature. I've given this book to friends who've been in various kinds of emotional crises. It allows you a way to sort of work through the issues that we all face as humans in our emotional lives, and it makes some ties with the natural world that are beautiful and moving. I'm moving the mic over because I was looking at Deborah and going, you've got to read this book if you haven't read it.
I haven't read it, so it's wonderful.
It's a lovely book. Actually, everything she's written has been really wonderful.
And here is John Muir telling you, perhaps, what you might discover from listening to us. There is a love of wild nature in everybody, an ancient mother love ever showing itself, whether recognized or not, and however that love is covered by cares and duties. So step away from your cares and duties and indulge your love of wild nature.
I would like to dedicate my next reading to the great wildlife rehab people in our area.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my gosh.
We had Cindy Daly from Discovery Bay Wild Bird Rescue come last year to visit us with her ambassador owl, and she does amazing work, and so does Jay Moore in SQUIM, the Raptor Research Center there, and Sarah Penhaligan from Center mm-hmm. Valley Wildlife Rescue, and I guess it's Center Valley Animal Rescue is the title, but they also take care of wild animals there. So anyway, I am going to dedicate my reading of H is for Hawk.
Oh, I just finished that.
You know, it's a much more recent love that I have, and I just fell head over heels for this book. It covers a lot of ground. Mostly it's about her relationship with a goshawk that she's
training. Did you give the author?
I didn't. It's Helen MacDonald. The book is H is for Hawk. She says, I'd dreamed of hawks again. I started dreaming of hawks all the time. Here's another word, raptor, meaning bird of prey, from the Latin raptor, meaning robber, from rapere, meaning seize. Rob, seize. The hawks were goshawks, and one in particular. A few years earlier, I'd worked at a bird of prey center right at the edge of England before it tipped into Wales, a land of red earth, coal workings, wet forest, and wild goshawks. This one, an adult female, had hit a fence while hunting and knocked herself out. Someone had picked her up, unconscious, put her in a cardboard box and brought her to us. Was anything broken? Was she damaged? We congregated in a darkened room with the box on the table, and the boss reached her gloved left hand inside. A short scuffle, and then out into the gloom, her gray chest raised and her barred chest feathers puffed up into a meringue of aggression and fear, came a huge, old female goshawk. Old because her feet were gnarled and dusty, her eyes a deep, fiery orange, and she was beautiful. Beautiful like a granite cliff or a thundercloud. She completely filled the room. She had a massive back of sun-bleached gray feathers, was as muscled as a pit bull, and intimidating as hell, even to staff who spent their days tending eagles. So wild and spooky and reptilian. Carefully, we fanned her great broad wings as she snaked her neck around to stare at us, unblinking. We ran our fingers along the narrow bones of her wings and shoulders to check nothing was broken, along bones light as pipes, hollow, each with cantilevered internal struts of bone like the inside of an airplane wing. We checked her collarbone, her thick, scaled legs and toes and inch-long black talons. Her vision seemed fine, too. We held a finger in front of each hot eye in turn. Snap, snap, her beak went. Then she turned her head to stare right back at me, locked her eyes on mine, down her curved black beak, black pupils fixed. Then, right then, it occurred to me that this goshawk was bigger than me and more important, and much, much older. A dinosaur pulled from the forest of Dean. There was a distinct prehistoric scent to her feathers. It caught in my nose, peppery, rusty as storm drain. Nothing was wrong with her at all. We took her outside and let her go. She opened her wings and in a second was gone. She disappeared over a hedge slantwise into nothing. It was as if she'd found a rent in the damp Gloucestershire air and slipped through it. That was the moment I kept replaying over and over. That was the recurring dream. From then on, the hawk was inevitable.
I love that book, too. The writing is just sort of it's juicy and earthy. And you learn a gigantic amount about hawks and falconry. And you also learn the story of how the author was working through her relationship with wild nature and her and grief and who she was also in the world. So it's not an easy book, but it exists on many levels.
Yeah. But it's astonishing.
It's still on the New York Times bestseller list, too. So I think the question of not being easy is that it is a philosophical book as well as a book about
nature,
a bird.
Yeah.
And all of you may be recognizing at this point that those of us who put Nature Now together gather some of our greatest strength in living from contemplating, studying, being with, and thinking about the natural world. We feel very fortunate.
So well said. And I think we will play another mystery sound for you. Of course, that was a sampling of the language of orcas. Specifically, it was from the J-Pod. You, too, can listen to orca talking amongst themselves. At orcasound.net, not only can you learn about our local killer whales and how and why they make such a vast array of sounds, you can also practice identifying orca pods by their calls and listen live to any of the 5 hydrophone nodes in the Salish Sea. Again, that's at orcasound.net. Of course, you can also go to the Port Townsend Marine Science Center website to listen to the hydrophone located near the pier. We have had such a good time here.
And we haven't had time to talk about all our books.
Should we do one more mystery sound?
Yes, because it's a really good one. Okay. It's one of my favorites.
Here we go. Thanks again, you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's the sound of a swan paddling the water with its giant webbed feet, wings whirring, gathering speed to lift off the water into the sky. Now multiply that by 30 and add the sound of trumpeting, and you will get an idea of the sights and sounds that Kate Dwyer was treated to last week. She wrote in to say, "On a recent walk, friends and I saw and heard 36 trumpeter swans lazing about on Anderson Lake. As we watched, they took off in groups of 6 or 7 at a time. They run on the water for some seconds with their giant feet, making a marvelous sound, and finally lift in a low formation, creating gorgeous white reflections in the dark green water." According to Roger Risley, who lives by the lake, this is a daily phenomenon. The swans arrive about dusk and leave in the morning for Beaver Valley. If you'd like to see them, go in the morning before 9-ish and at dusk to watch them land. Quite a show. The trumpeter swans are fall and winter visitors in our area and should be on their way north for the breeding season in about March, so don't delay going to see them. Our thanks to Kate for the lovely description and to YouTube for the great recording.
We hope you found today's show interesting and informative, and that you'll tune in next week when we return to our usual format. This program will be rebroadcast at 5 p.m. on Thursday and 11:30 a.m. on Saturday, and a podcast will be available on the KPDC website in a week or so. Thanks for listening.
Nature Now is produced by Nan Evans and edited by Charlie Fleischman.
Today's closing music is Happy Trumpeter, performed by Bert Kampfert.